My name's Paul Bestall. This is Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. This week, we return to Australia to discuss the Yowie. But this time, we're on the west coast of Australia, 4,000 kilometres away from the previous hotspots we've discussed. We talk to Nick Slater about his experiences, his interest in the subject, and the ongoing search for the Yowie. Before that, thank you to everyone that has left us comments or reviews. We really appreciate anyone who's taking the time to post our praises. Make sure you help us grow by leaving us a review on your podcast app or subscribe to us on YouTube. We've also started bothering the podcast charts in the UK, USA, Canada and Australia. So thank you so much for your continued support. Some of our upcoming shows show our commitment to bring you a wide spectrum of guests from around the world. So I hope you continue to enjoy and support us. And if Matt in Sydney is listening, I hope you've poured that glass of wine ready for this week's show. Don't forget, you can vote for the marvellous Sam Sheeran in the Beautiful Bizarre Art Prize Awards. So check that out, and I'll put the link in this week's show notes for you all. And before we dive in, don't forget to follow us on Facebook. We're on Twitter and Instagram as Mystery Monsters. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, and please review us on any of your podcast apps. Don't forget, you can also support us on Patreon. But now, it's time to join Nick Slater in Western Australia. My guest today is Yowie researcher Nick Slater from the Western Australia Yowie Research Team. Nick, welcome to Mysteries and Monsters. How are you, sir?
I'm well, thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. I've done a couple of episodes on Yowies because I just think they're fascinating. I find the whole thing so perplexing and have done since I kind of discovered the whole Yowie phenomenon about 20 years ago when I saw an interview with Dean Harrison, who's probably one of the most well-known Yowie researchers out there. And everybody I've kind of spoke to, they've had an experience that kind of drag them out into the bush, and after that they've never gone back. So what was it that drew you to this subject, Nick? What got you into Yowies?
I've always been interested in it. I always grew up sort of reading the Australian mysteries books and stuff like that. Sort of John Pinkney is one of the authors. It was 3 years ago when I first got sort of pay TV. We were watching all those monster shows like the Mountain Monsters and Finding Bigfoot and all that.
Yeah.
And it was my eldest son, he goes, oh, have we got anything like that in Australia? And I said, oh, yeah, we do. We've got the Yowie. I knew of it.
Yeah.
So we sort of had a sticky beak online, and then we found AYR, the Australian Yowie Research, Dean Harrison, his website. And then we sort of, they asked, oh, can we go out and have a look? And I said, oh, yeah, sure, why not? We'll go and give it a crack. So we're camping a fair bit in Dwellingup, which is about an hour south of where I am. I'm in Perth, the northern suburbs of Perth, only 5 minutes from the beach, really, so it's usually an hour drive to the bush for me. But we decided we drove out on this track well away from all the campsites. The youngest bloke, he fell asleep in the back. So we just sort of pulled up on the side of the track and we're having a look around. We thought we'd try some tree knocks of all things. Did a few knocks and my son goes, "Oh, did you hear that?" I'm like, "Oh, no, what was it?" He's like, "I don't know. I think it might have been a knock." I'm like, "Oh, right, yeah." So I said, "Oh, we'll do another one, see if we can get anything back." So we did another knock and then sure enough, just right on the edge of hearing, you could hear this faint sort of pop. I'm like, "Oh, right. Okay." So I said, "Oh, let's do two knocks and see if it's echo." So we did two knocks and then sure enough, only one knock came back and it was like, "Oh, all right." We started to get the heebie-jeebs on and then we decided to leave that night and I haven't really looked back since. We sort of started looking into it a little bit more here in WA, sort of all the reports and things like that. Sort of it's only been the last 3 years and more so in sort of the last 18 months. I've had a bit of time off this year because I've had a crook neck and things like that. But so it's pretty much been a fairly sort of increasing hobby over the last sort of nearly 4 years now. So yeah, and then I'm about the only active researcher in WA. There's a couple of other guys and other people out there who are interested in it, but they sort of don't go out as much as I do, and they're not looking right into the history and all that sort of stuff that I've done. So yeah, it's been an interesting sort of 3 years.
Absolutely. So, I mean, as you've referred to a couple of times there, Nick, you're based in Western Australia, whereas I think for anybody outside of Australia, they tend to kind of think of the Yowie as more of a sort of east and south east kind of phenomenon. But like you said, you live in the Perth area, which is about what, 4,000 kilometers away from, so you're basically the complete opposite side of the continent, aren't you?
Yeah, pretty much. So if you're looking, it's almost say from the UK to the other side of Europe is the span that you're looking at, or the span of America is sort of something similar too. It is an interesting thing because, so I mean, I've got a sightings map that I've done, which is one that's looked into the history of sightings in WA, and I think the earliest one I've found is sort of mid to late 1800s, and that was further east. That was out more towards the goldfields, out towards Kalgoorlie way. And then there's another one sort of a little bit later on. There was an expedition that went out and east of Northam, which is sort of an hour east of Perth. So they've gone further than that out towards the sort of the drier, more deserty country. And there was mention of it there. There's a reference to what they call the Mabu in the Rabbit Proof Fence, the book, which is that was in the 1920s. And then, but within sort of the southwest region of WA, which is where I am, there's not the earliest sighting I've been able to find of the big guys, the Yowie, is early 1980s, which in Calamonga. But traditionally, the local Aboriginal people here in the southwest are the Noongars, and if traditional stories are all of these little people, they call them, or Mummery men, little Mummery man, so about sort of 4 foot tall. Even when I've spoken to a few of those people, they're like, "No, I don't even know we had the big guys here. They're all over east, aren't they?" So there is stories here of the Yowie. They're not a lot. Apart from the fact is we're sort of, well, WA is the biggest state in Australia. It's basically almost a third of the country. And we've got everything from sort of Jarrah and Karri forests, thick, dense, sort of almost sort of sub-rainforesty sort of stuff to desert. And then right up north, you've got all the mangroves and tropical areas. So we've got a spread of terrain and climates that's so diverse. We've got one of the smallest populations within Australia, in the city. So it's very much a matter of there's all this space. There's you know, bugger all people, and there's not that many people out there looking for them. I think all up on that map, I think I'm around about 50-odd sightings and sort of encounters that I've talked to people about, and not only that, my sort of my own stuff I've found. I personally have not had any sighting, a visual sighting, but I've had several very hard to explain encounters with pretty much what I'm pretty certain is either the little mummery men or the big guys. More so, I'd say the little ones, the little hairy men, which are they're known over east as the Jundjiti, I think they call them.
Yeah.
There's a few different names, obviously, around for all of them. So it's an interesting thing that's happening here, and I think that something different to the eastern states has happened here is where, especially particularly in the southwest, they've moved in after the Aboriginals have sort of left the bush over the past hundreds or so. So there's more, I can find more information sort of orally and historically for the little hairy man here in WA.
Yeah.
Other than the big guys, it's sort of everything is post 1980. So for the big guys outside of the southwest region, which I mean, for the southwest region of WA, it's from Geraldton in the north, which is about 300, 400 kilometres north.
Yeah.
And that sort of cuts its way through to Esperance, which is basically, Albany 6 hours sort of southeast. Esperance is probably about 8 or 9 hours from memory.
Yeah.
This is a massive region that in itself has different climatic zones in itself as well. So it's very complex here in the way it is to the eastern states. So if you sort of look at the guys in Brisbane, it's sort of very that sort of subtropical rainforest sort of stuff. Then in New South Wales, you've got the Blue Mountains, really rough, deep, dense terrain.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's sort of, we've got the coastal plain, then we've got what's known as the Darling Scarp or the Darling Range, which sort of extends from just sort of northeast of Perth down to around the Dwelling Up area. And then the next sort of mountainous area is down south near Albany. But we do have, quite interestingly, is a green belt stretching from sort of the northeast of Perth, 1,000 kilometres all the way down to Albany and all the way down through the southwest, where there's a lot of country in there that people just don't go.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about Australia is, you know, once again, I think it's one of those things that, you know, like everybody assumes in England we all speak like the Queen and we all drink tea. And I think for a lot of people who don't live in Australia, they just assume it's cities and desert. And it isn't, because there's massive ranges. I know, obviously, like where you are in Perth, you've got the Mundaring State Forest, and I think you've got Dwelling Up as well, which are two vast expanses of natural forest. And
that's connected from Perth all the way down south to Albany. In that area is actually quite a famous walk trail, the Bibberman Track, which is reference to the Aboriginal people. And that's a 1,000 kilometre long walking trail from Kalamunda through Albany, which goes through all this Jarrah Forest, Karri Forest. And then you get down to south, like places like Denmark, and there's trees that the Valley of the Giants, these trees are huge. Like they're, you know, 50, 60 metres tall, massive monster, old trees and stuff like that. So Australia itself is a very ancient land as well. Sort of European history is only 200 odd years, but the Aboriginal history goes back, well, we've got 50,000 years. I think they were genetically diverse from the rest of the world. There's sites in Queensland that are dated around 80,000 years.
Yeah.
There's a site in Victoria that's 120,000 years. So there's all this, there's so much ancient history here And there's so much that here that's just people don't go. They don't, you
Yeah.
don't, there's just no one there, nothing there except animals and apparently these big hairy bipeds or small hairy bipeds for most of my instance.
Yeah, I mean
So.
it's interesting for me because, as you refer to there, there's a lot of parallels, and I've mentioned this with a couple of other Yowie researchers and a couple of Bigfoot researchers I've spoken to. That there's a real parallel with Native Americans and their oral histories of Bigfoot and Sasquatch, and it seems very similar in the way that the Aborigine legends and stories work, that they have, depending on where the tribes were based and their culture and their social connection with their area, they all seem to have different names and different variations. Whereas in Australia, you've clearly got a definition between what seems to have happened on the eastern side compared to the western, and as you've referred to, on the west, people seem to refer to more than being smaller creatures. Like money men and Dundurgins. So I always found that quite a distinct difference because obviously in Native American folklore there are a few tribes that talk of smaller versions of the Sasquatch, but they're not as common as in comparison to say the
No.
Aborigines.
No. Well, so if you look at the eastern states, if we draw the parallel between the eastern states and WA, and that a lot of the researchers that I talk to in the eastern states are fascinated by what's happening over here because they want to draw those parallels. They want to see if the things that they're doing over there work here. So over east, what they call the Jundjili, is pretty much on the coastal plain, in the bushland. Coastal plain, and the Yowie's up in the steep rough country up in the Blue Mountains or the Great Dividing Range. Now the difference here is we don't have that massive range that runs from the south to the north of the eastern part of the country. We've only got sort of sporadic parts, bits of ranges that are joined by these big Jarrah forests. So. And everywhere outside of the sort of the southwest region makes mention of a big hairy biped within sort of time stories or the mythology or folklore or whatever, however you want to say it. But within the southwest region, it's all these little hairy people or the little people they just call them, the Maori men. So it's an interesting thing that here. In this climatic zone, that it's been limited to a smaller variety rather than both, which you sort of seem on the eastern states, and the bigger guys are sort of further out into the more arid country over on the west side of the country. So it's certainly different, but the parallels between from what I've found in my research is I seem like over east, they get these big, you'll see like the big tree breaks, big trees bent and twisted and all that sort of stuff. Large sort of different things. But for me, all I've found, and they're all on the same species of acacia or wattle, they're small breaks, they've sort of been bent, snapped back into the bush, or they're bent and twisted a couple of times. They're not on big, 20, 30 meter trees, they're all on small sort of the shrubby stuff, which for me sort of says, well, it's definitely something smaller. And it's evidence of foraging for food. So what we have, or we call them bardy grubs in the West, or witchetty grubs, more common known as, but they're quite well known to be in the acacia tree, the roots and in the branches as wood borers. So the stuff that I've found has sort of been evidence of food foraging. I do audio recording in the field, so I've been fortunate enough to capture these anomalous wood knocks, which the guys over east seem to be getting less of. I'm getting more wood knock that I'm capturing. The guys over east are getting more howls and things like that. There's more vocalizations there. So there is sort of certain parallels between it all, but there's also big contrast. And that's, I think that's just the regional diversity and things like that there. So, and interestingly enough, the wood knocks that I've captured, I've got a couple sets of three knocks. I've got another one where it's a sort of a single knock followed with an unusual grunt. But what I noticed in some of the wood knocks is that within on the audio program, the spectrogram, which shows you the frequency spread and things like that, that they were two of these knocks were the same sort of frequency spread. And I was like, oh, cool, I've got a pattern here. So, all right, well, that's great. I've got a pattern of what it looks like on the computer. How can I say that that is a wood knock or a tree branch cracking? With our fairly dry climate, the eucalyptus trees are quite well known to sort of crack and break and drop limbs out of nowhere and things like that. So once I get back into it, I'm going to, and the first guy to do it in Australia and maybe even the world, I haven't found anyone in the US that's done it, is to actually specifically go out and record myself creating these knocks on live standing trees, on dead standing trees, dead fallen trees, and on rocks, and using different things to create the knocks and see if I can match them up to what I'm capturing and stuff that I capture in the future, so that there is a way that we've got a data set to say, look, that is more than likely something unknown in the bush that's creating a knock. It's not a tree that's cracking. That sounds like this. It's not a branch breaking in the wind and things like that. So that's sort of where I'm at with my research, and moving forward, that's where I'll be sort of focusing on. Basically, so we can say to everyone, hey, we've got this evidence, we've got this audio of these anomalous knocks, and it's more than likely something with hands out there banging on a tree. And then there's like other guys, and it come off the back of other guys over east, like the Rusty Triple Two. He's done awesome audio work, but with footsteps. I think his data, he's able to almost calculate the weight of the creature, and possibly even step length and things like that with the different tables he's got. It's all about, working with each other in the different parts of Australia to sort of get the best picture of what's really happening.
Yeah, and I mean it is interesting, and you've referred to it there, that there does seem to be, from everything I've read, because like I say, I've got a real appetite for this Yowie situation down there. It is very interesting that there seems to be a distinct difference in the alleged communications that people are hearing, like you've referred to. On your side, it's more knocks and bangs. And yet on the east there's a lot of vocalizations, and that's quite an interesting distinction. Whereas if you compare it to, say, Bigfoot in northwestern US and Canada, it seems to be a mixture of both. In specific areas, you'll get the howls and you'll get the wood knocks and the clicks and the whistling. But I mean, I was very fortunate a few weeks ago to speak to Ron Moorhead, who's probably most well known for recording the Sierra sounds back in the early 70s, Nick. And he had those analysed, and the frequency was beyond the vocalisation range of a human. It was clearly there. But also, because of the remoteness of the location, it would be harder to hoax it than it would be to believe it's something else. And I find that fascinating, because Australia, once again, is one of those places that, within 30 minutes of leaving one of the major cities, you're essentially in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, just about. And even more so here, sort of. I mean, we've got the metro area is sort of a spread. So Perth, it's sort of, it'd be about 50, 60 k's north. It goes into the foothills, a little bit up into the Darling Range in Perth and stuff like that. Then it's probably about another 100 k's, 50 to 100 k's south, of the main built up areas. And then it spreads out, and down south, it's all wineries. And sort of food and stuff like that. Beyond the ranges, to the east of the Darling Range is all crop farming, and shrimp farming and stuff like that. But I mean, there's and then the wheat belt. So WA specifically, I mean, it takes, for me, being pretty much right on the coast, it takes an hour to just sort of get out into the more remote areas of the closer sort of bushland areas for me. Interestingly enough, though, here I got in contact a guy from the UK who came visited Australia, visited his family. He got in contact with me through the Australian Yowie Research website, and it was just sheer random luck that we picked this area to go to. It was sort of halfway for both of us. And we had whistles. On the first night in, we had a big, massive branch snap break thing happen, which I caught on audio, or we just caught on audio. We had another night, we had something thrown at us, and we were escorted out, pretty much the whole way out, which was a good sort of 5 k's almost, not. But and then sort of one of the last nights we went in, there was two sort of very human-like whistles from this small patch of scrub, which you just couldn't see into with a torch. There's certainly we seem to be getting a lot more sort of wood knocking, and definitely whistles at night. And this whistle was like a two. Bought sharp whistles, and it was like, well, hey, it's not a bird. I have not found a bird that whistles like that at night. And seemingly the knocking and stuff like that, I'm getting a lot of. I've had another instance, when I went camping with my two sons down in the dwelling up area. We sort of went off trail and up towards the top of this hill, and we're sitting there having a break, and there was these two sort of wood knocks, the distinctive pop of it, and we sort of stopped, and we all looked at each other, and I've just said, "Oh, just quiet, boys, listen, listen." And they were thinking, I didn't want to get the camera out, I didn't want to chase it because I had my sons with me. And then it's hoping I caught it, because I wear an audio recorder on my pack when I go, as a sort of an easy way to sort of log my expeditions above and beyond the video stuff that I do on my YouTube channel. But then within about not too long later, there was that came closer by about 30 or 40 meters. There was another two knocks, same sort of cadence, same volume. So we're getting pretty excited by this stage, and the direction of it was away from cars, it was away from everything. And then it moved away back to the original spot, two more knocks again, and then that was it. So we sort of followed it, the direction it came, and came across one fallen tree. We matched the sound and the cadence of the knocks. There was some knocked over grass trees, we call them. They're sort of like a black trunk with the big sort of grassy looking leaves on the top. One of them had been knocked over, and sort of we dug some grubs out of that. So yeah, there's stuff out there. There's stuff happening. Particularly, I'm getting a lot of knocking or wood knocking, whistles, especially at night. And there was one other instance where we sort of heard a mumbling, sort of talking just out of earshot. You couldn't quite understand it. That was following a sort of a thicket of a tree line. Excuse me, across this the top of this hill, and my wife was there for that one, and she got goosebumps from that one. So There's something happening here. There's something out there. People are seeing it. There's, I think, 15 odd sightings of the big guys in WA. Excuse me again. And then there's, I mean, I've got one witness I spoke to, Ryan. He's in the short Yowie documentary teaser trailer that young filmmaker Serena has made, and we're going to do some more filming with that early next year, which I'll talk about in a second. He's of Aboriginal background, Noongar Aboriginal, and he's sort of mentioned this one sighting with a big Yowie that he had. But he also mentioned, I've had more sightings than I care to count with the little hairy men. So there's certainly something happening here out in the bush that we just don't know what it is. So
I mean, looking at the reports and the sightings, you seem to have what looks like a essentially a triangular area down from sort of from Cervantes down to Busselton and Albany. So, have you found that that seems to be the most common area for these reports to emanate from, Nick, or have you had sporadic reports from outside of that area, or is it basically looks like it's concentrated in this specific triangle?
Well, the main reason why, I mean, there is reports outside, there's reports right up north. There's some in Exmouth, Moore River, but it's sort of that Cervantes Moore River area. But the reason why they're all sort of centered on this, the sort of one area, the Cervantes through to Busselton sort of area, that's where all the people live. That's within a close enough range. I mean, Busselton's sort of 3 hours south, but there's a solid highway all the way there now. So it's where the people live, it's where people are seeing them. There is sporadic reports of stuff outside of that. I mean, there's even back, well, early 1900s, there's a report of what they called the Spinifex Man out in the sort of western central desert area. So there's certainly a spread across WA. The reason why they're being seen so much in this one area is basically that's where all the people live. In WA, in sort of the Perth and greater metro area, and then the semi-rural areas off that. And that's where people go. I mean, they come from Perth, people come here, they go down to the wine region around Busselton and Margaret River and that area. Otherwise it's all cropping farms, sheep farms, or it's bush. National parks, state forest. So, and there's just in those areas, there's a large amount of nothing. So there's plenty of places for them to hide. And from what I've gathered and learnt from people I've spoken to here is they don't want to be seen. They don't have any interest with us whatsoever. I mean, we're pretty the biggest predators in the world. If you look at Homo sapiens, where if one person can't do it, we'll go back and get 20 more and come back and finish the job. So it's and if they are being seen, it's for a specific reason. So whether we're too close to something that's important to them, so for example, like a food source, a water source, maybe they've got young at the time, the family unit or the troop or whatever's got a whole heap of young individuals around. So we've sort of scratched the surface of the mystery, the phenomenon. And we've got all these questions, and like for me doing the Woodknock study, it's a way to answer answer as best as I can. Short of getting one on video doing a wood knock, as to what it possibly could be. So, yeah, it's just, I think we need to sort of try and answer those questions that we have as best as we can, as well moving forward, or else we're just sort of chasing our own tails, really. We've got, you know, I've got this recording of a of what I believe to be a wood knock. Oh, yeah, that's great. But how do I know that that is a wood knock? So that's sort of my next step for over here. And then, I mean, hopefully in that, maybe I'll be able to see one and interact with one. I think that's the dream of most researchers.
Yep.
Would be to even just to sit down and watch them for, you know, 5 minutes would be, or 10 minutes would be the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
But whether that'll happen or not is another question.
Indeed. I mean, well, to be fair as well, Nick, I think you're tempting fate because, you know, there's a lot of witness reports. And, I mean, this is the other thing that's always struck me about witness reports of Yowies. You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters on the Paranormal UK Radio Network. Is that there seems to be a real emotional response. Be it fear or just bewilderment from people, and there's been a couple of really well documented cases that have kind of hit the mainstream this year. Because I was when I've spoken to a couple of other people, it seems to me this is the year where the Australian media has kind of embraced the actual potential of Yowies existing down there, and have basically started to take a real interest in it. And I think since I've forgotten the gentleman's name, but it was an interview with Dean Harrison on his Yowie Hunters channel, and he was the guy that essentially was driving along and he thought a rock had fallen down the cliff, the side of the road, and then it stood up and smacked his van.
It was a dump truck. It wasn't the van.
Yeah. I mean, it was a big, you know, a big old vehicle, Nick. And he was still, I mean, it was I think about a month, 2 months after it happened, and the fear in his voice was palpable. You could tell he was emotionally just baffled and scared and just so confused. He'd got no idea what had happened to him, and there was no way that anybody could tell him anything else had gone on, because he'd look straight at this thing.
Yeah, well, that's interesting enough. And this sighting is the most fascinating one for me personally, and I personally think it's the most fascinating one Australia-wide, only because I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to do a one-on-one interview with a witness. One of the sightings on that map is actually smack bang in the middle of a suburb.
Yeah.
It is in this suburb. There's a creek that runs through it. It's sort of one of the suburbs in the foothills, close to the bush of the Darling Range. Hmm. And there's a creek that runs through it. And you can follow that creek, and that creek runs all the way back up into the hills. So there's a belief, sort of, I think, worldwide that Yowies and Bigfoot, Yeti and all the different ones sort of follow creek systems or riverbeds, as it can get around. But this guy was out late one night. He was doing some metal detecting, I should say.
Yeah.
And in this area, there's sort of a history, like ancient homesteads. It was orchards from the early 1900s to about the 1960s, I think, and then it was cleared out for the urban sprawl.
Mm.
But interestingly enough, there's two mandarin trees left there, and he was swinging his detector, and then all of a sudden he sort of got this something. He thought he said no, but it was more like a gruff sort of growl, sort of short growl at him, and he looked up and there's this big silhouette of a man, of a thing, with glowing eyes looking back at him, and he crapped his basically crapped his deck, and then turned. He said as he went around this sort of side drain, he sort of felt a feeling that he was being watched from the bush there. So actually, I mean, looking at the thing, I sort of said, well, maybe the Yowies have come in, the family group, mum, dad, and the kid have come in knowing that the mandarin trees are there.
Yeah.
Come in, and he said he went back a couple of nights later, or the next night, and he swears that the tree was completely stripped of fruit. But talking to him, and this was 12 months after the encounter.
Yeah.
And you could hear the fear in his voice.
Yeah.
He wasn't comfortable being close to the sort of bush on the edge of the creek line.
Yeah.
And it just, it's basically, it's not as well known as maybe Bigfoot or Sasquatch anymore. I think it's gaining a bit more ground. The Yowie phenomenon is gaining some more ground recently, particularly with the news articles and stuff like that. And some higher profile, sort of more spoken about encounters. But a lot of people have never ever heard of the Yowie. So they're going out driving where they would, you know, they've driven maybe 100 times before, and then all of a sudden there's a big hairy biped that's not supposed to exist staring at them. So it's just shattering their worldview in a heartbeat sort of thing. So
yeah,
it's certainly interesting, and it is quite widely believed that the Yowie is somewhat more aggressive than Bigfoot or Sasquatch.
Yeah.
But for me, I've not experienced that. I've not sort of felt that. I think if they were truly aggressive, everyone would know about them because there'd be that many attacks.
Yes.
But it's there's something happening. People are seeing them. They're reporting the same thing from far north Queensland to Victoria, across South Australia, into WA, all across the country. So there's stories, long old stories of, you know, I've heard a few different ones. I haven't been able to pin down the source just as yet, but of the hairy man of this place, or like Cal Barry, for example, which is just north of Geraldton. There's a story of them being in the mangroves at Exmouth, which is where the desert meets the sea, basically.
Yeah.
There's stories of little hairy men through northern Western Australia and across the Top End. So, yeah, people are seeing the same thing, doing similar things, and why would, you know, I think it's on record, I think we're probably approaching sort of somewhere maybe around the sort of 450, 500 sightings, reported sightings. So, and if that's one in 10 people who have seen one say something, well, then there's sort of probably much more going on than we truly know. So,
yeah, very much so. And you, once again as well, Nick, you know, as we've touched on, you know, from coast to coast, Australia is probably as wide as the States. But you've got, I think, well, the population of Australia is between 30 and 40 million, isn't it? It's around there, I think. Which is about a tenth. I think America, the population is 300 and odd. So once again, you've got a vast expanse of country where nobody lives. You know, I think, you know, there's one main road that runs from one coast to the other. Hardly anybody, you know, if you're wanting to travel, if you're going to drive, good luck to you.
I've driven around the country. I've driven through the guts of, there's a lot of nothing out there. And, that's why, up in the Top End, they call it the Never Never, because it just never ends.
Yeah.
The bush as far as you can see. There's to cross the Nullarbor. I mean, to cross the country, it's four days hard driving. That's hard driving to get across the country in 4 days.
Yeah. I mean, it's fascinating for me, like you say, because for me, I think, in certainly in the modern era, the Yowie witness reports are probably the best best reported, best witnessed incidents that we've had around the world in regards to weird hominids and bipedal creatures that aren't thought to exist. And I think it's something that's only going to keep developing, because I'm still perplexed, because I love cryptozoology. I've been fascinated with Bigfoot since I was a child. But not that I'm showing any particular bias, Nick, but I seem to think that the Yowie seems to be a more... There seems to be more one-on-one interaction and a better witnessed event than we've had over anything to do with Bigfoot in the last 20 years. I know there's been a couple of fairly well-documented cases, but the Yowie seem to be so well-documented, and because of the country, the only thing it could possibly be is a mature roo, which doesn't bear any resemblance to what these people see, because they're able to see it, you know, face on, often in headlights or streetlights or wherever. I just find it incredible, because it just seems to be a I know Dean Harrison has mentioned that there is a theory amongst you guys down there that and you've touched on it earlier, that these guys some of them seem to enjoy spooking people out.
Well, I would almost agree with that. Particularly where I in the southwest of Western Australia, the little hairy man is quite well known as being a trickster. And with the cheeky sort of court jester, if you like, of the hairy hominid world. But at the same token, there's quite a few instances of, and I've spoken to a few researchers who've, you know, they've almost walked straight up to them, walking up a hill, walking straight at them. And particularly early on in the piece with Ian Frost, and I think they called it Fatfoot, the situation in the Blue Mountains there, and it would almost play with them. So it's certainly, and I mean, for us here in Australia, we don't have bears.
Yep.
So we don't have an animal that can get up and stand 3 meters tall and walk on 2 feet.
Yep.
Like you mentioned before, the biggest animal we have is a big male kangaroo.
Yep.
And they can vary. It varies in region. We've got three sort of big types of kangaroos: the eastern grey, the red kangaroo, and the western grey. And they can get big and buff. I mean, there's some videos on YouTube of that one crushing a metal bucket.
Oh, yeah.
And they sort of reach the 6-7 foot mark in height.
Yeah.
But we know the shape of them. We know how they move, yet people are seeing something walking on two legs, standing relatively upright, swinging arms and hair, over the most of its body. Yet, and there's also reports of varying thicknesses of hair from, and so there's within Australia, we've got all these regional sort of diversities, and we're seeing, you can almost see and hear that in some of the reports.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, don't get me wrong, Australians are known for a pretty good yarn. But we don't come out and dribble crap, you know. We're not ones to embellish a story just for the hell of it.
Yeah, I mean that's something, and maybe it's, you know, I don't like to make sweeping judgments on people, but that's one of the other things that's always struck me about the Yowie reports, Nick, is in my experience and what I know, Australians are not known for exaggeration. They're very to the point, very blunt, and if they've seen something, they'll tell you exactly what they've seen.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, we don't. We're not known to mince our words. But It's interesting too because, I mean, like on YouTube recently, I think the Daily Mail picked it up as well. Was the short teaser trailer that I was involved in for this documentary, Amber in the Bush by Serena Cockerell. She's doing it for a uni degree, a young filmmaker. But it's so even in that respect, so I mean, she's what, early 20s sort of thing, but it's gathering momentum, and then over east with Yowie Dan and working on the track documentary. And this one that Serena's doing is completely self-funded, part of a university degree. She's actually working on a Big Cats one, an Australian Big Cats one here in WA as well, which she's working at the moment. But sort of February next year, I've convinced her to come out to do maybe a night expedition, and hopefully we can get something for that. But and then over, you know, within the forums and all the Facebook groups and stuff like that, you're seeing younger people coming through that are interested in it. They're hearing stories of it. It's gathering momentum, particularly, I mean, recently in even with the Daily Mail's poetic license that they use. In Queensland, sort of there's been a lot more movement in Queensland, I think, lately. So there's certainly it's in my opinion, I think it'll either be here in Australia. The most likely one that I think will be found first is probably like the Orang Pandak or something, because there's been specific scientists, field scientists that have witnessed it.
Yes, very true.
Visually, but I think with what's happening here in Australia with the guys like Ray Doherty, Rod Benfield, Australian Yowie Project, you've got Yowie Dan and the Track documentary. There's some other guys. You've got Australian Yowie Research. There's guys in almost every state who are doing something, and we're trying. Rusty Triple Two, David Rowan Reed. I mean, all these guys are the ones who I've learnt from. I've benefited from their years of experience. So it's, but we're all looking very citizen scientific way. We're trying to sort of hone in our methodology, get the answers that we can answer now, and then hopefully it'll gain more momentum.
I
So I think
think.
either between
Yeah, go on,
the
sorry,
Orang Pandak or the Yowie will be one of the first ones, I think, discovered.
I think
So
that's.
in my
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that certainly chimes with my opinion as well, because I've spoken to a couple of people who've been out looking for the Orang Pendek, and like you say, there's some really interesting first-hand witness accounts, like you say, of biologists and scientists that have been in the areas that have had face-to-face encounters with these things, and they know exactly what an orangutan looks like because most of them are there as part of orangutan conservation. So I've forgotten the lady's name. There's a really famous interview with a lady who's been based out in that area for 20, 30 years, and she saw one 20 years ago, plain as day, and it changed her life. So,
She's a field biologist or something like that as well.
absolutely. She, I mean, she was, I think she is an orangutan conservationist, and her job was there was obviously cataloguing and taking care of the population out there and looking for the numbers. So, and she, I think she saw it in the middle of a wood on a track, just stood in front of her. So, I mean, what do you say to that? I mean, because there are only two explanations there. She's either lying or she saw it. And why would she lie? Because it'd just completely discredit her entire career.
Well, exactly, that's right. So it's hopefully we can gain some momentum in or I guess you'd call it mainstream science. But that is starting to happen. And I think that's starting to happen worldwide as well. So, but yeah, there's fascinating stuff happening here in Australia, with the Yowie and what research people are doing. It seems to be gaining momentum in popular media. And why not? Why couldn't there be something undiscovered out there? It's
I mean, like, I mean, you've referred to it before. I mean, I completely agree. I think there's a real momentum about yaoi research at the moment because, for me, it's one of those frustrating things, Nick, because, like I say, I've had an interest in yaoi since I first came across them. I think it's a very underdeveloped part of cryptozoology because, you know, there are more Bigfoot documentaries and films you can shake a stick at, and it's the same with you know, other things around the world. But yaois, I think now, you know, like you say, obviously with the documentary you're involved with, Amber in the Bush, and obviously, like as you've mentioned, Yaoi Dan's helping out on a on another one called Track. I think it's long overdue, Nick, because I think more people outside of Australia have a real thirst for this cryptid, and I think for you guys down there, I think it gives a bit more validation to it. Not that I'm, you know, disproving anything, because I'm all in on yaois. I think there's something very odd going on in Australia.
It's different to the rest of the.
Yeah, very much so, and I think it deserves to have a higher profile, probably in regards to the people in the US and Canada that are out there looking for Bigfoot. I mean, obviously, at the beginning of the conversation, you mentioned Finding Bigfoot, who had a famous expedition when they came over looking for yowies. I think they were in the Eastern Coast, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They actually met with Gary Opet. They met with Ray Doherty. Hang on, the dogs are going a bit silly. Hey. Hang on. No. There we go. They're looking at me strangely now. Yeah, I mean, it was, and a lot of it does. There's the Australian Cryptozoology Conference that's happened a couple of times. And everything that happens here seems to be on the eastern state, so it's been great that Serena has oh, bloody dogs. Hey, no, shush. Where was I? It's been great that Serena's put it out there that she wants to do it. So, and to get the sort of get something happening over here in the West is great too. So. I'm looking forward to working with her on that. I think we're going to have another look at it in February, but in between now and then, I'm looking to do an interview with her on my YouTube channel, sort of to promote what she's doing with her work and stuff like that. So it should be good moving forward. Hopefully, I can get my neck sorted and get back out in the bush and find some more stuff here in WA.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, since you've started going out there, Nick, it's very clear that you've got a real thirst for this and you're developing it. And I think it's crucial that you keep on doing what you're doing because, like you say, you're using a lot of audio. And a lot of witness reports. Have you found, as I've said to a few people, once you kind of put your name out there, I mean, obviously you were featured in the Australian Daily Mail the other week in regards to talking about the documentary and the difference between the Western reports and the Eastern reports. Have you found it that since that you've kind of more people are coming forward with experiences and stories, or has it been a steady drip drip since you've kind of got into it? Or, like you say, once again, is the momentum out there pulling more people towards you?
I think, I mean, I was very fortunate in the fact that Dean Harrison, he sent me a lot of the witness contacts and stuff like that early on in the piece. And I was lucky to talk to through emails with a few of those people. But it's slowly been sort of dripping in, dripping in, dripping in. And as sort of my Facebook page grows, just West Oz Yowie Research, and as I do more things and it gets spread out there that more people realise that there is someone here in WA doing it. And excuse me. And so there's sort of a few more people come forward. There's people. Some witnesses have sort of been around it for a little while and talking to the Eastern States guys. But as what I do sort of grows and gains a little bit of momentum, Facebook wise, and on my YouTube channel, it's sort of there's a few more sort of people come out of the woodwork, and I'm not shy of telling people what I do. And I'll also say that I've never seen one, but I've had something whistle at me in the middle of the bush at night. So it's there has to be there's got to be something out there that's causing that thing, and that's what when it first started, that's what got me hooked was those wood knocks, and here I am, sort of three, nearly 4 years later, trying to figure out how if I can identify wood knocks on an audio recorder. And it certainly has it's as what I'm doing has grown, and my presence or knowledge about me has grown in the West, then more stuff is coming out. I'm also apart from the fact I also write articles for the Yowie Times.
Yep.
Which is Yowie Dan's, I think he's now quarterly newsletter. So, and Dan asked me to write that because everyone over the East is fascinated to hear about what's happening over here. So, particularly in Western Australia, it's quite new for all the guys over East who have been doing it for, you know, 15, 20 years. 25 years, quite fascinated with what's happening over here. So I've had that sort of mentorship from some of those guys over East as well, which has been great.
I mean, that's...
But as it's building, there's certainly more people are coming forward, I think, as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it only benefits everybody involved in it down there, Dan, with like Dan and Dean on the East Coast as well, giving you that kind of support as well, Nick, because it's important. I think that because of the size of the country, that you've got that kind of positive relationship where you know, as you've referred to in regards to the term mentorship, that they've welcomed someone out there with boots on the ground, as it were, Nick.
Well, it is, and I mean, it took me. I spent a good 12 months sort of lurking in the back posts of the AYR website and stuff like that. And it was pretty much asking questions and then asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And then they started reaching out to me.
Yeah.
So it's been an interesting sort of a steep learning curve, but definitely an interesting journey, and I'm looking forward to getting into the next part of it, really.
Absolutely. I look forward to your updates with great anticipation, Nick. I'm really looking forward to seeing what you capture and the documentary. So before I let you go, do you want to tell everybody where they can keep up to date with your work and find out more about what you're doing in the field and the like?
So for me, I'm West Oz Yowie Research, and that's on Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah.
For those out there who are already subscribed to the Times,
yeah.
I'm the author of West Oz News.
Yeah.
If you're not subscribed there, you can send Yowie Dan an email at australianyowie@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And then you can hear about, I've got another article in November's one,
yeah.
Which is sort of talking about my wood knock study and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously as more comes out with this Amber in the Bush documentary, there'll be updates on my Facebook and my YouTube channel as well. So, and hopefully I can get back out in the field soon enough and launch into this wood knock study, and all that stuff will be put up on my YouTube channel. Again, West Oz Yowie Research. It's everything's under the one name for me, so.
Yeah, fantastic. Yep. Absolutely brilliant. Well, listen, Nick, it's been wonderful to talk to you because, like I say, I've only ever spoken to people who were out there on the East. So to know that there are strange things and obviously very different things going on the West Coast is both interesting and perplexing, because it seems as though you've got two distinct species, you would say.
Yeah, and I would put it out there that we do. We've definitely got the two here in Australia, and there's definitely more about the mummery man or the little hairy man here in the southwest of Australia. Yeah. And, yeah, I've had a mate, a researcher, Rod Benfield, he sort of hit me up saying, are you sure they're not just little big ones, you know?
Yeah.
I said, no, these are a distinct species of hairy man here in WA. So certainly fascinating.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you again for your time today. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you, Nick. Keep up the good work, and we'll keep an eye on your channels and certainly see how things go. And I wish you all the very best and good luck with the documentary. Can't wait to see it.
Great. Thanks for having me, Paul.
Hey, my pleasure. You take care down there, my friend. All the best, Nick.
You too, mate. See ya.